On today's show, we discuss 50,000 U.S. troops have now assembled in the Middle East.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We got a packed show for you today. Will Haynes in studio, Jordan Seculo, my brother in studio. We got Christy Campagnone, one of the ACLJ attorneys, with a good victory report coming with one of the cases we've been following. You're going to be excited to hear that a little bit later in the show. There are some big news happening right now, and we are in the last couple days of our Double Your Impact drive. So we're going to cover all of that today. As military begins had a more and more of an uptick troops have now assembled in the Middle East. Now, I want to clarify, because you're going to be seeing that headline a lot, or you're going to see things more that suggest 50,000 new troops have been deployed. That is not the case. What the case is that we are now totaling roughly around 50,000 troops in the Middle East. That is about 10,000 more than normal, which is a percentage-wise a sizable uptick.
Right.
That is not nothing. But you are going to see a lot of people saying 50,000, and they're going to be inferring, especially like the New York Times article that came out today, inferring that there are 50,000 new troops that are arriving in the Middle East. This is not accurate. There are 10,000 additional troops that have been added to the normal standard procedure, 40,000 that already exist in the region. Of course, the talks of boots on the ground, what that looks like, has been a major, major point of discussion as President Trump has been weighing the kind of going back and forth on if this is going to happen or if it won't.
That's right. So when you look at this number, and once you see the places like the New York Times put, there are now over 50,000 American troops in the Middle East. They are trying to, as you said, make it seem like this is an influx of 50,000 U.S. personnel, when in reality, there's normally about 40,000 around the Middle East at the bases in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Qatar, UAE, Kuwait. Right. Now, some of those personnel may have changed as they pulled, less operational individuals back, or some of the families that may have said, we want to get out during that time when the war initially broke out, and putting more combat ready troops. So I'm sure some of that plays in as well. But about 5,000 extra between Marines and sailors just arrived to the region. We also know that 4,500, because the Gerald Ford had to go to Crete for some maintenance and things of that nature. So there's that net gain of really about 1,000 there. But once again, that's still 20 to 25% more troops in the region, which you would expect during a wartime. But it's all building towards whether or not the president is going to do an operation to either go after Kurg Island, which is where that oil and gas refineries and situations are, or send in a ground operation to secure that enriched uranium, which is popping up everywhere, people talking about. And I want to know, does our audience, would you support something like that if it was a boots on the ground operation to get uranium?
If you had asked me a year ago if this is something that was in President Trump's playbook, I would have said no. I have to say his tone has shifted quite a bit. Not I will say he's enjoying wartime, but he certainly is celebrating the military successes. He is certainly not backing down from it. And it's more, again, I don't want to say having fun, but he talks a lot about, you know, blowing stuff up, eliminating top leaders, you know, doing that kind of thing. The thing that President Trump probably would not have done a year ago. Now, again, the times have changed. The world has changed. What do you think? I want you to let me know. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. I want to hear from you as well. And again, Jordan's here. We got one of our ACLJ attorneys, Christy, joining us a little bit later on the show. And we're going to keep that discussion going. Again, big ACLJ victory report. One you're not going to miss. A real heartwarming one. And phone lines are open for you and your conversation. 1-800-684-3110. I'm also looking in the chat right now. Let me know how you feel about that. Do you think the boots on the ground scenario, tell me if you think it's going to happen. And do you want it to happen? Or are you okay with it? I think that's more okay. I don't think any of us want it to happen. If we could avoid war, specifically putting our own troops in harm's way, of course, we would want to avoid it completely. But are you okay with it happening? Let me know in the chat right now if you're watching on YouTube or watching on Rumble. It's a great way to do it. You can also call me at 1-800-684-3110. Lots of great conversation happening right now on our chat on YouTube. I'm looking at it. Look, I think there's quite a few different points of view right now. There are people saying that if President Trump deems it necessary, they're not going to push back on it. Some people saying they're done with voting for any party. Feels like everyone is warmongering, so that's another point of view. One that I think is very interesting. A person put that they are supportive, but doesn't mean they're not frightened. They're both frightened and proud. I think that is something that probably checks with a lot of the American people.
Well, and I think to that statement is that anytime you have a direct combat in that way, I mean, even the air campaign isn't without peril for our U.S. servicemen and women. However, when you add that element to it, a ground strike of some form or fashion, whether right. it be just Marines or just Special Forces, or if it's a more broad type of incursion into it with troops on the ground, boots on the ground, as they say, there is another layer of danger for U.S. men and women that serve our country. This big operation that's getting some reporting, it's out of Wall Street Journal had it first, but it's that the president is weighing whether or not to send in a military operation to secure 1,000 pounds of uranium from Iran. The difference here, rather than whether it be a special forces strike, Jordan, on a leader, or whether it be even securing that oil and gas island,
right,
is that now you're talking about a major logistical operation.
Yeah, you've got to have people going in. You're going to have enemy fire coming in on any kind of aircraft to deliver or vehicles to deliver those troops, those locations. We know that a lot of these locations are underground, that they've been previously bombed, so that we don't know they have the structures, how those structures are. I'm sure that this uranium's also been moved around, we know.
Right.
Because this isn't just from this conflict, but from months ago, in the first major strikes over the summer. I was in Strasbourg, France, at our European Center for Law and Justice, when the U.S. and Israel made those first hits at the Iranian nuclear sites. So how stable are those sites to begin with? But when you start putting troops on the ground, then to move out what is 1,000 pounds of a very dangerous
hazardous material,
I mean, the likelihood of mass casualties, mass being, helicopters going down, planes being shot, is much more likely.
I mean, comments are coming
it's
saying,
not to
how
be
you
negative.
Do this?
Right. Well, and that's where
right.
you
it's
would,
not like just going and getting Maduro, right? It's yeah. not like going and just taking out leaders or a person. This is going in and securing an area for a period of time that would include engineers
right.
to extract it. So you can't like just go and grab this. It's not like a bank robbery.
Right.
You know, you're not saying, hey, here's the uranium, we go. And it's not like that. So it would take days. So you'd have to, have a military campaign that basically weakened their defensive so much in those areas that you almost are like waltzing in. And listen, is that outside the scope? No, the U.S. military certainly can do that. But what we've seen so far is, again, this kind of still this discussion of we'll negotiate, we won't strike your, take out all of your energy yet. But if you don't negotiate, you don't give us uranium, we will. You know, if something like that occurs, I mean, if Iran goes dark, does it make it easier to go in and extract uranium? Likely, but it is still, I mean, this becomes a mission that's a lot more dangerous than anything done from the air.
Well, and once again, I'll pass back to you, Logan, though. The IRGC is not a insurgent terror group in Afghanistan. They are special forces. Those guarding this uranium are going to be their elite. So it is not the same even type of mission of kicking down doors in Baghdad and finding an insurgency. Yeah. This is a well-trained operation that would be able to inflict a lot of pain on the United States if not done in the most secure way.
We have to. I think the explanation to the American people by the administration leadership would have to be much more direct than it has been so far. So we'd have to see real addresses, you know, from the president directly into the camera to the American people before you start, because the moment you start sending troops in on the ground, not what we may do covertly, because that's always yeah. different, but troops in camo on the
in
ground,
mass,
enlisted
yeah.
people. Even if it is mostly special forces, it's going to take engineers, they said, people like that.
Right.
You're going to have to explain to the American people why it is worth U.S. lives to do this now, why it's necessary now, why is this the time to do it? And I think that can be done if you really could put this together. But you also have to think about, this is a way to also show some cards to the Iranians to say, we're willing to go this far. So if you're not going to negotiate with us, we'll shut down your energy, Iran will go dark, and you don't know who we're coming for or when we're coming for it.
I think some of the blackout that has gone on in Iran, the, you know, the power outages, the control of the internet, all that, has created a visualization that is difficult for the American people of what this war could look like. And then you start adding on to things like we are going to extract uranium. I think most people have to start Googling, how do you even store uranium? How do you create uranium? Right. Then how do you store it? And then how do you extract it? And how do you do that on a plane?
What you explained it in that one.
Right, and I think that that is going to be a harder pill to swallow because it doesn't feel...
It almost feels like an action movie.
Right, it doesn't feel authentic.
Right.
Also, if you start sending in, like you said, camo troops on the ground, there's got to be a very, very specific mission.
Well, and I think that does go back to what President Trump has said since before he was president, that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. That has always been the singular goal of this. The getting rid of the Ayatollah for many of us was an added bonus. But the mission here is to stop Iran from being a nuclear power and from having this capability. And when they were even bragging about how much enriched uranium that they could get to a warhead, that tells you where their mind was at. Without securing that, I think it does open the president up to a lot of criticism from both sides. That you started this, you did degrade them, you did take out leadership, but you left what... Now, they may not have the ability to rebuild a warhead or the centrifuges, but they still have... that enriched uranium. That is a very important part that I think to the what the president has always stated.
And Americans needs to get too. Out. I mean, they have the ability to shut down world shipping. The 20% of goods and oil that goes through the Strait of Hormuz, they have the ability still operationally to make that to shut that down without you risking, again, serious life by moving vessels through or paying bribes, as some countries are doing.
It's almost the weird negative of such massive success early on in this what do you want to call it, war, where day one, you had the removal of the Ayatollah.
Right.
Within 3 days, you had pretty much a destruction of their entire leadership. So I think there is now going to be a much shorter window because the mission seems... I don't want to say smaller, but to the American people, that was the bad guy. You took out the bad guy. What are we doing?
Well, and once again, that's where it goes.
I don't
back
hold that,
to,
by the way. I'm not holding that opinion.
Well, you're even hearing some senators, like Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana, that it said last week, I think it's about time we wrap up Iran. But the original goal was always to eliminate the nuclear threat. That was, no matter how much the media and the Democrats on the Hill tried to say there's no mission, it was always clearly
so
stated.
We have to slow down and explain it.
The uranium, we have to take out the entire capacity for them to create a nuclear weapon. And if that means securing this, whether it be through some sort of deal where we are able to go in and take it, or if it is by military force, I think that is 100% in line with the goals of the president and Secretary of War Hegseth and Marco Rubio, as they have been saying from the beginning.
I'd like to take this call. Let's go to Ann in Pennsylvania online too. Ann, go ahead.
Hi guys. I think the bottom line is we have to talk about how much the enemy is at stake here. The enemy is so vicious, and the level of evil is, I think, what Trump is taking into consideration. He has all the intel. We have 40 years of torture and abuse and savagery on the Iranians and the Persians, and thousands of Americans have been slaughtered for 47 years. We have a Democrat Party that's been saying for many years that Iran cannot have uranium enrichment and nuclear weapons. And the president knows exactly this. He does not like war. He hates war. He was against the Iraq war. He is the commander in chief. He knows what the intel is. And I just feel it really just shameful that people are just so quick to judge and so quick. And, you know, when I had first heard this morning, you guys announcing that there were troops on the ground, I had no idea. And I actually got really happy. And I'm not happy that troops are on the ground. I'm not happy that we have a war in Iran. But regime change needs to happen. And I'm happy because I trust President Trump. And I'm happy because I know that he knows what he's doing. And it just makes me happy that we finally have a president.
And I'm only cutting off because we're actually out of time for this segment. I think that is very interesting because you seem to have, trust in the president, which is great. And on the other hand, you're concerned about it. On the other hand, you're happy about it. So I think there is that sentiment. That's what the comment that said. I'm terrified, but I'm happy.
Well, and also to clarify, they are not on the ground in Iran at this
right,
moment.
Middle East.
Yeah, the 50,000 are at the bases around there on naval vessels.
U.S. troops that we usually have in that region. So, I mean, right. I think for people to realize that we usually have 40,000. So now it's an additional 50,000. That gets reported now. If we weren't in this conflict, you could move 10,000 troops never over enough. Like this, and it would not even make it a not the fourth page of the New York Times.
Yeah.
Because it would just be seen as, oh, it's some training mission or this or that or something with shipping, something with our allies, something, you know, maybe we're building a new base. Once those troops are on the ground, and it's not just intelligence and maybe secret covert operations, we've entered a whole new world on this conflict, and I think President Trump is going to do everything possible not to have that happen.
Yeah, when we get back, we're going to check in with our ACLJ attorneys because we got a big victory, one that you're going to like. You don't want to miss this. This is a really good one, one that'll make you smile. So just stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Seculo. You know, every day this month, I've wanted to highlight something really interesting the ACLJ legal team has been working on. And today, as we wrap up our Double Your Impact drive here at the end of the month, I am excited to share a victory with you. And look, again, when we talk about on the world stage, the ACLJ is involved on the highest of high, you know, biggest government issues that are happening, whether it's in Nigeria, whether it's in Israel, wherever it may be around the world, in Europe, of course, here in the States. But we also still are representing the individual student who needs our help. And sometimes you get to do that twice because we have some great clients that know their rights, know what they're going to say, and are still happy to proclaim the name of Jesus whenever they can. And Will, that's precisely what happened. And again, I have a smile on my face because I know this is a positive.
That's right. And we brought this up. We had Christy on a little bit more over a week ago when this issue came back up because it was a client that Christy was the initial attorney for this client back when she first had an issue in Washington State where she was being subjected to bag searches, making sure she had no contraband. What was the contraband? Christian material, things to share her faith with her fellow classmates. But we had to represent this student again as, now that she's in middle school, very similar situation. Christy, give us a little bit of background of, once again, what happened here.
So our client was a sixth grader now in middle school, so it's fun that we represented her when she was a second grader, and 4 years later, she is still on fire for the Lord, sharing her heart with others about Jesus. But she was pulled out of her math class by the vice principal and told that she needs to stop sharing the Christian tracts with others. And on top of that, when she asked, well, why are other people allowed to go to the ICE protests and bring ICE protest signs into the school, but I can't talk about my religion, she was told that's because it was an opinion, and opinions are allowed, but her religious views weren't. Additionally, she said, well, what about the Christian club that I want to start? And she was told, well, you have to have a teacher sponsor that club. So all of these things are fundamental violations of her constitutional rights. She is allowed to talk about her faith at school. She is allowed to start a Christian Bible study. We at the ACLJ have been fighting for this for 30 years. This is what we do. And yet there are still vice principals who don't know the law.
And Christy, we quickly, fortunately, already had a connection with this client because she is not going to give up on sharing her faith. And we have already had a victory for her. But what happened right before a deadline that we gave the school district, as it seems to happen, what did we hear back?
The best news for our client that within 1 week, we sent a demand letter and we said that you have to give us a response by Friday, 1 week by 5 p.m. And literally at that deadline, we received a letter back from their counsel at the school saying that, yes, she is allowed to do these things. She does have this right and they will ensure that she gets that. So what a wonderful victory for our client. She doesn't have to go through a lawsuit and all of the stress and trial that comes with a family, that we were able to within 1 week get her all of the results and secure it just like we did 4 years ago. And that's what's so important about the ACLJ, where we are able to fight for our clients and stay with them for many years as they continue to grow, and that she is now going to be able to be in her middle school, hopefully without any more issues coming in from the administration.
It's like, we'll see what happens in high school, right? I mean, right. but Christy, we were in Washington. I was in Washington, D.C. last week with our team. We were talking about this. It, on the one hand, it's shocking. It's like, how many times do these school districts have to learn their lesson? But on the other hand, you get one administrator, it's a vice principal in this situation, a student who's been through this before with the ACLJ, knows what their rights are, their parents know what their rights are. They pick on this student. They did it once before. They do it again. And we're able to vindicate their rights within a week. But it does also, I think, underscore to people why you've got to speak out and why you've got to be that student who is willing to tell your parents if this happens, willing to say, no, this can't be right, and not just kind of roll over if the administration says you can't do this.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a parent myself. How many children are wanting to talk about their faith with others at school? It's fundamental to our religion and our faith of what we're supposed to be doing. Yet you have these administrators bullying them. I mean, how intimidating for her to have been pulled out of her math class by the second highest person in the school and being told she can't do something. And so she knew that was wrong and she stood up for her faith. And think of this as being your child, your grandchild. You want to encourage them to stand up for their faith and you want to show them that you're willing to fight for them too, which is where we can step in. And we don't need to bring a lawsuit necessarily. In this instance, what a blessing that we didn't have to sue. We were able to get this resolved in 1 week.
And Christy, I see a lot of comments coming in right now. People are asking, where is this? Where did this happen? Why this happen? Of course, what happened in these areas? And, you know, we said this happened in Washington. But what we need to know and what everyone needs to know is this is happening everywhere. This is not just in states that you would historically think are maybe more left-leaning or liberal states. This is happening in Texas. We have cases all over the country where this is happening on what feels like a daily or weekly basis that we're getting reached out to by some parent or by a student saying, I need your help. And this doesn't fall under any lines, really, of blue or red.
Right. This was Washington State, but I mean, we've seen this happen in Texas. We're seeing this happen in Georgia. This is everywhere. And what it is it's administrators who don't understand the law, even though they're going to training. I know that tax dollars are being spent to teach them what the law is, and yet they're still doing this to students. So we do have to hold them accountable. That is part of why we need our donors' help, our sponsors' help, to help these children from the administrators who are just violating the law, and right.
And I think, folks, for those of you out there who are thinking, okay, you know, maybe it's just these places, think about, it might not be, maybe your kids are older now, maybe you're out of the school system, but your local school system, you could be in a very red state, but the public school system is still controlled by those teachers unions. Yeah. Those teachers unions that we've been talking about for years, and even when they get the training, they are unfortunately not just left-leaning, but kind of have this anti-religious bias and anti-Christian bias, really, and conservative bias. So we've seen the teachers say you can't talk about free speech leaders, you can't talk about Charlie Kirk. We saw that. We saw you can't start a Bible club if you want to at this middle school. After this school district has been through this before with us, with this student, and has had to realize that within a week, but they still try to get the student to roll over. They still try to get you to say, okay, I won't push. I won't contact the ACLJ this time. I won't fight back. So it doesn't matter the politics of who your congressman is, who your senator is, your state. Your public school system is still where there are a lot of battles. We talk about city councils a lot, public schools and the school boards. That's another place we've always been fighting at the ACLJ since our very beginning.
Yeah, and you may be watching this and going, oh, I didn't even think about this. I've had this similar situation happen to my son or daughter had a similar situation, or maybe there is a workplace issue you've had. Anything that kind of falls within our scope, I want you to do never feel bad about reaching out, going to aclj.org/help. Doing that, you fill out a very simple form and you get attached to one of our ACLJ attorneys, and we'll very quickly tell you whether it's something that we think applies, something that is legal or illegal, or we can fight for you. We get all the answers to you very quickly. You're not sent to a call center. You're assigned to an attorney and our legal team at aclj.org/help. I always want to make sure that we promote that as well.
Well, and also think about this, because there is no cost to the client when we take on these cases. You may think, oh, it was a demand letter, they didn't go to a lawsuit, that wouldn't have even cost much if they went to an outside counsel. Nope. It would. Getting going to any sort of law firm and saying, I need you to take legal action, send a letter on my behalf, they're going to be billing you for that. Not at the ACLJ. That is exactly when your impact is doubled, what it goes to help.
Because when you send that letter, you have to back it up with the ability to actually go to court. You're saying, we will go to court. We can do that with your resources. be part of our matching challenge now. Donate today at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org, because when you send those demand letters, you can't just walk away if they don't respond. You have to be ready to send the attorneys, go out to court in whatever state, whatever school district it is. Donate today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to the second half hour of Seculo for the day. If you missed the first half hour, find it on ACLJ.org, however you get your podcasts. We are available there. Just search for Seculo or ACLJ. It should pop right up. Or on the ACLJ app. That being said, we got a couple days left here in our Double Your Impact Drive, just today and tomorrow. So I want you to be a part of that today. All donations made are doubled. And we're going to have a special challenge for you guys for just this back half of the show right now, because we've been looking at our numbers and the numbers have given us a bit of alarm. But I think you guys can do a little bit of help right now and help us get over the budget that we need to set for today. With that, also, there are a few of you on hold right now. We will get to your calls and comments throughout this next half hour. We got no guests lined up. It's just me, Jordan, Will. So it's going to be a packed second half hour, but packed with your voices, sharing your opinions, as we have discussed, that now that 50,000 troops, again, it has hit 50,000 troops, have arrived in the Middle East, United States troops. What does that look like? Obviously, President Trump is weighing the options of what a ground insurgency could look like if that was even to happen. I wanted to get your thoughts and comments on that at 1-800-684-3110. We also wanted to set aside some of the stress that's coming from those headlines to let you know that, yes, as we use the word assembled, 50,000 troops have assembled, and that is more accurate than what you're seeing on somewhere like the New York Times, which are more inferring that 50,000 new troops. They're not saying that, but 50,000 new troops have arrived. There's about 40,000 troops that are always in the Middle East, give or take, at any time. So you have seen a sizable uptick. Let's not joke around. It's an arena size full of troops that have arrived, 10,000 troops. As Jordan mentioned earlier, though, if that was to happen on any other day, probably would not even be looked at, but with obviously, the potential for a ground insurgency, that is what everyone's talking about today.
That's right. And also, when you read deep, when you're like 15 paragraphs down, even in the New York Times report, they say military experts caution that even 50,000 troops, many of them at sea, is a small number for any kind of major land operation. The media wants you to be scared. That's what they thrive off of. That's how they get you to click, and they get their advertising dollars, is by scaring you into thinking that this is World War III. I've heard actually over the weekend, that term went away, where people talking about this being World War III. They're bringing it back. They're trying to make the World War III happen. They are wanting you to think that we are currently in the middle of that. Even when all of the data and what we're seeing points against that. We're seeing actually the Gulf regions not turn into complete chaos. We're seeing people we didn't think would join our team on this saying, we actually may need to step up and do more. And that is all because of the strategy and the way it's taking place. And that you can take a lot of these experts over the last 50 years and kind of throw out their opinion at this point, because they have been completely wrong about this. These are the same people that were pushing for the other Mideast wars that turned into a quagmire for the United States for a very long time. And what do we see? This is completely different. Now, it's not over. There could be a lot more ahead. And it is a conflict. There are so many unknowns that can play out. But thus far, it has been, as far as a military operation, done so well and so many objectives being hit that they're having to then jump again to the World War III concern to frighten you and to say, look, there's 50,000 people on ships in the Middle East, to try and make you scared that this is going to be something that is going to completely crumble America. But in reality, that's not what we're seeing. And they are trying to use these numbers to their advantage to make you scared instead of getting you to read and learn the truth.
And we get back here, I want you to not only call in, but we're going to give you a challenge. We are in the middle right now, not the middle, at the very end of the Double Your Impact Drive. It ends the day after tomorrow. We're a little down financially, I'm not going to lie to you. I'll give you a more exact number of where we are from budget, and maybe you, it's not that far off. You guys have really turned up, and I really appreciate it. It's not that far off. It's an obtainable goal that we could do today in the next half hour. With the amount of people watching, the amount of people supporting the work of the ACLJ, I think we can do it. I want you to be a part of it. I'll let you know how you can get involved coming up in the next segment. Of course, if you can give, give right now at ACLJ.org, but I'm going to issue that challenge when we get back. And you can give me a call, too. We got three lines open at 1-800-684-3110. We have some phone lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110, and I will get to your calls coming up in this segment and in the next segment. But I did want to let you know, we are in the middle, of course. Not in the middle. I keep saying the middle. We're at the end. It's the end of March. Can you believe it? We made it here, folks. It's the Double Your Impact Drive. We have it all month. And look, we're able to track where we are financially. Are we hitting our goals? Are we hitting our budgets? And Will this morning came to me and said, look, here's where we are. We're not sizably down. We're not compared to what we can raise, but I think we can issue a challenge to our incredible supporters, those that listen and watch each and every day. And this is just for you all in the air. You're not going to get an email that says this. You'll get an email that says, you know, be a part of the Double Your Impact Drive, all that. But you're not going to get one this specific. And I asked him for the specific numbers, not just a round number. I'm going to round it off a little bit just for your own sake. But we are $29,000 down from our set goal for today. $29,000. That may sound like a lot, but there are so many of you watching right now that I know are capable of supporting the work of the ACLJ. And don't hear that number and think my $10 donation doesn't go far. The ACLJ is built on the backbone of people that give $25 to $75. Because in special months like today, your donation is doubled because there's other ACLJ members and champions at different levels that have committed to unlocking a pledge if you donate during this month. So that $30,000, that $29,000 is actually even half of that is what will get us over the hump. So I'm going to ask you to be a part of it today. Go to ACLJ.org. We got 9 minutes in this segment. We'll have another 10 minutes or so when this show is over. So you got about 20 minutes. Can we do it? Can we raise this much amount of money? Can we actually have the support of our listeners and our viewers over the next half hour to help us hit our budget and our goal for today? So I encourage you to do that right now. Then we're going to take some calls and comments. That's at aclj.org/impact or scan the QR code you see on the screen right now if you're watching. If you're just listening, there's obviously just go to aclj.org. All donations are doubled today. So be a part of it right now. Again, we're $29,000 down, and we'll keep checking on that as hopefully donations roll in over the next 20 minutes. Should we take some calls?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
All right.
Let's go to Tom in California. He's been on for a while. I know I jumped over a champion. I'm sorry. Let's go to Tom, California. You're on Seculo.
Hey, thank you, guys. Y'all are the dynamic duo. Batman and Robin got nothing on you. And y'all are putting the guilt trip on me so well. I'm going to go to confession and cut y'all a check early and send it this month rather than next.
Thank you.
Month.
I appreciate it.
Anyway.
Not trying to guilt anyone, but I appreciate it. I understand.
Okay. Don't let the Democrats deflect all this Middle East garbage from the really crux of the issue, which is dishonest politicians. We need an IRS and giving the IRS agents an incentive on every penny they find that had been stolen, embezzled, or corruptly taken by the government or by the government and people allowing it without oversight. And we need to crack down on that. We need an IRS just for government programs and give the agents incentives financially to turn over all the crooks in our damn government. It's gotten...
So, Tom, I will jump in here and say that on Friday, J.D. Vance held his first meeting of the new anti-fraud task force. That was something that President Trump announced during the State of the Union, that he was creating that. So, I mean, and once again, who was there? The Secretary of the Treasury. The IRS is under the Department of Treasury. So when you do look at this, this is what you're talking about, and IRS for corruption, so to speak. That's what's going on. And actually, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, Jordan, has unveiled a whistleblower program where there are rewards for successful reporting of fraudulent activity. We've seen the reports out of California now that where there's so much potential fraud with the hospice programs out there. It was the daycares in Minnesota. It looks like there's a big industry in hospice fraud in California. And all of that is stealing from the American people.
Yeah,
it's from taxpayer dollars.
People weren't looking. The government wasn't going to. People were saying, you know, we get these reimbursements or we get these kind of tax benefits back. And so these funds are available to us, and the checks were just being written. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, is the IRS really functioning for the American people right now? No. And we also don't have a fully funded government. Right. And we're talking about invading Iran potentially with limited ground troops and taking out uranium with engineers and maybe taking Karg Island, which is the main oil hub of Iran, while they still have ballistic missiles to shoot back. And yet we can't figure out how to fund enough TSA agents so people have to wait in line 6 hours at an airport. I mean, the flights into the United States are being canceled. So I think that one thing you have to do is always, when you are going to engage in conflict overseas, is your country has to be running as best as it can. And so I think what we have to look back and say is put more pressure on Congress. I think the fact that they left without getting a deal to so where people could, again, know that it might take a couple hours to get through airport security, but not six, not seven, not that you're going to miss most of your flights or the fact. So I think that, again, that kind of uncertainty isn't great when you're talking about sending troops into a war zone and not just an air campaign, which we tend to accept more in the United States as a risk. So I think, again, this is up to Congress. The president can't do that on his own. But all of that, I think, has got to start working together. I think the American people, before anything additional occurs or the next kind of level occurs, have got to hear it explained by our leaders exactly why they have ordered what they've ordered.
Before we go to another call, Jordan, I did want to bring up, you mentioned the DHS shutdown, the mess that it has become. It's not, that doesn't help the Republicans now.
Security, talking about sleeper cells from Iranians in the United States, and our TSA isn't operating fully. I mean, it seems like you're asking for a problem that you have the ability and you've built since 9/11, the capabilities to prevent, but you're not funding it at a time when we have killed the Ayatollah, the supreme leader of Iran, and most leaders of the Iranian government, and some of them down to their third leader in some cases. So it's a time when you want your Department of Homeland Security and your TSA to be fully operational.
But then at the end of the week last week, President Trump said, I'm going to go and through emergency issuing, I'm going to issue paychecks. You see the Democrats freaking out over the weekend, literally saying, this is illegal. How dare he pay them? We have the power of the purse. But the irony here is that while it may technically not be, it could be challenged.
Yeah.
The people who would have to challenge it, who would have standing, are the TSA agents who received a paycheck illegally, who are not going to go and say, you know what? How dare he pay me for showing up to work? Right. I think it puts them in an interesting political position when the congressmen themselves may not have the standing to sue over this, but they're going to go out there and complain that they're getting paid because the congressmen and women can't do their own job.
I think that's why you saw Mike Johnson come out so strongly on the Senate. He wasn't just blaming Democrats. He blamed Republicans and Democrats and said, I can't believe they left. I mean, they left trying to leave the American people. You know, on Easter week, people are traveling. It's still spring break, happening across the country, lots of travel. And yet you're being told basically in a lot of airports, like, don't even try. I mean, that's while a war is going on, it might be an air campaign war, but you've got the President of the United States talking about the potential for ground troops. The numbers going up, like you said, you see these 50,000 numbers. A lot of this is talking people through it. It's not talking the military through it. I'm talking about deep strategies that we don't need to know. I'm talking about you have to talk the American people through why it's worth risking that much more life, and why don't we have the security in place for our airports that we pay for with our tax dollars?
Yeah, absolutely. When we get back, I do want to hear from you. We have 2 minutes left on this segment. Probably, we could take a very, very quick call. Let's go to Jerry in Tennessee, who's been on hold for a long time. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, Will, Jordan, and Logan. I just wanted to share with you that, man, we need to support our president. This is a time, this is a very important time. We need to be praying for him. I know you all are, and many of your listeners are, but Iran has been involved in so many bad things worldwide for such a long time. This is the time that we can stand up and make a difference for our world long term.
Yeah, Jerry, I think you've had many, many administrations. You've had many, many political campaigns that have run on the threat of Iran. And now you actually have a president administration willing to do something about it. And now they're getting, you know, the heat for it. Because there are always empty promises that come in from political campaigns. And look, no one wants war. No one wants to see our troops in harm's way. Of course, that is somewhat inevitable when you have these kind of situations. And that's unfortunate. And I hate that. I think you also, of course, as you said, got to pray for the president, got to pray for the administration, got to pray for everyone, and pray for our troops, absolutely. And you got to pray for the American people, because we know how wartime affects people. And it also affects the way people, what they support, what they don't support. We have a very, very interesting year coming up. We'll talk about that when we get back at 1-800-684-3110. You can be on the air today. Again, I issued that challenge. I'm going to ask you to be a part of it right now. We'll check an update when we get back of where we're at. But when we started this segment, we were $29,000 down from our budget. I want you to help us get there. I know we can do it. Help us do it in the next 15 minutes before this show is over for today. Go to ACLJ.org. Again, it's obtainable. If it's $5, $50, whatever you can do, it's doubled right now at ACLJ.org. All right, last segment of the day. Be a part of our goal set that we put together just a couple segments ago, because I looked at the numbers of talking to Will and found out we were about 30,000 down, 29,000. And I said, let's try to do it. Let's try to encourage all the people who are watching and listening right now to give and help us beat budget for today. And we'll give you a report either at the end of the show or first thing tomorrow if we're able to accomplish that goal. Sometimes it takes a minute for our processing to go through and all of that, but to make sure everyone is authentically donating. Sometimes there's issues with that, but overall, I want you to give if you can, because all donations are doubled today as we are about to wrap up our Double Your Impact drive at aclj.org/impact. Again, your tax-deductible donations are doubled today, and the deadline is here. Be a part of it, not only for the Double Your Impact drive, which ends at the end of this month, which, of course, is just a few hours away, really, but for this one specifically, we want to hit today's goal, which, again, we were down about 29,000. We really could use your support. With that being said, I want to go ahead and take some phone calls, and we can take some more, too. There are some phone lines open at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Kathy in Kentucky. Kathy, thanks for holding.
Thank you. I see current developments moving the Iranian people closer to their opportunity they need to have for regime change, right along with the American goal of eliminating Iran as a nuclear military power.
So, Kathy, I think what is interesting as well with this is it also goes to show the way that President Trump thinks, because there has been reporting that some leaders were at the point saying, hey, now we need to encourage the people to take to the streets. Like, now we need to try and force this within Iran. But all the reporting, and once again, this is from anonymous sources, is that President Trump was actually the one to say, I'm not ready to do that, because why would I want to send people to their slaughter? Knowing how strong the regime still was, he didn't want that on his hands. He wants to take out the regime. He wants to take out their capacity to hurt the United States. But he wasn't willing to be the one that said, go do this. And then the headlines are of how many tens of thousands of people died for the cause of trying to retake their country. I think that that is something we all know is a likelihood could end up happening, is that the people that are ready and waiting for their moment to try and retake their country, at the same time, there being mass casualties in that. We know that 30,000-ish people were killed just this year for protesting. So it could be much more significant bloodshed if they are actually trying to retake the country. I pray for the people of Iran that if that is the goal that they take and the path they take, that they can successfully take their country with as minimal loss to their own life. I hope that the IRGC just walks away from it and realizes this isn't worth it. Let's try to go get safe haven in other countries and take as much of the treasure we have here with us. But I think that's yet to be seen, Kathy.
I think what we know, though, as Americans, too, for regime change to occur, people have to be willing to take that risk. You don't necessarily, as President of the United States, while you're still doing these mass air campaigns, tell people, go out in the streets. He said that very clearly when this started, this is not the time to do this. Right now, you need to hunker down because of the, it's too dangerous outside. Yeah. I think until you get that signal. But when given that signal, you have to take that moment. This is not our fight is not to overthrow the Iranian regime. That's not an American soldier's fight. Even when we're talking about taking away the uranium, it's not about taking away the regime. It's about taking away their ability to have nuclear weapons and be a threat to us. That they're still a threat to the people there. The people there will have to risk their lives at a certain point, more so than they have even to this date, to overthrow this regime. Is it going to be easier than ever before? Yes, and it's getting easier every single day, but there are those in the regime that are also going to try and cut deals with the United States. So it's one of those situations where, again, we'd all like to see a new Iran, an Iran that can work in the Western world. And we've seen the Middle East open up to the Western world. We've seen Saudi Arabia open up to the Western world. So we know it can happen, but it's going to take people risking their lives to do so.
We have a couple calls left. I want to make sure we get to them. One's an ACLJ champion from Indiana calling online for Lorraine. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Love you guys. Hey, I'm just a little nervous about the Houthis getting involved with this conflict. Can you give me some insight on maybe what their intentions are?
Well, Lorraine, they are a proxy group of the Iranians. They
I'm
are
say not great.
Yeah, they're not good.
The intentions are.
And so as long as they've got little mid-range weaponry, they're going to be shooting at our troops that are in the region. They have not stopped. But remember, when you take out their main supplier, they have less weapons to fire back at you, so they become much weaker as well. I mean, I think the issue right now is, what would happen to these proxy groups if Iran falls, if the Islamic regime falls in Iran, is they fall too.
Yeah, can we address maybe what's going on with the Houthis?
So that is the rebel group within Yemen that has basically taken over the country of Yemen. That is an Iranian proxy, and it's right there on the Arabian Peninsula, and they have the ability to go after merchant ships and things of that nature.
There have been some movement.
They have started to try some attacks themselves. They don't quite have the capacity that even like Hezbollah has, but they have taken over a country pretty successfully through that Yemeni civil war. They are causing some issues. They are engaging a little bit more than they have been. But as you've seen, a lot of the proxy groups don't have as much will to fight and die for Iran at this point.
Because they're not sure they're going to get resupplied.
Right.
So it's like, if you fire all of your missiles or your rockets today, there's no promise that you're getting more rockets tomorrow.
All right, I want to take this last call of the day, and I can't imagine a better one to take to help wrap up. And again, support the work of the ACLJ right now. Marion, Texas, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to tell everyone that they needed to donate money to ACLJ, because y'all not only help people in the United States of America, but you also help them around the world, people that are falsely imprisoned, people that may be even sentenced to death. And the ACLJ is their only hope. And when they arrive and come into the battle, many, many people are saved from imprisonment, and a lot of other people saved from death. So whatever you do, we give money to different charities, my wife and I do, but we give more money to ACLJ than any other program that we put into practice. So God bless y'all for what you're doing.
Thank you, Marion, so much. It's always better to hear from one of our supporters that says it than us just saying it, because you know the actions that we take are beyond even this show or the media side of this, which, of course, is very important. It's a huge, important reason to support. If you like this show, if you like what we do here, if you like the content we create, of course, that has to be paid for by we have an incredible team. But the legal side, like you said, is worldwide. And though it is always important to also know about the work here going on in America, like you said, we're supporting that kid in Washington State twice, who we're able to get a victory for twice. That doesn't come at no cost. But then the worldwide support, like you said, whether that is those who are imprisoned, massacres that are happening, supporting the people in Nigeria, our team in Europe, our team at the UN, all over the world. Of course, our Jerusalem office. The ACLJ is involved in pretty much every major issue that is going on in this country and worldwide. And you could be a part of that too. And I issued you that challenge at the beginning of this segment, just two segments ago, 20 minutes ago. And I said, I want to raise $30,000 additional, $29,000 to be exact, because that is what we were down for the day. You still have time to be a part of that. Do it if you can in the next few minutes. Go to aclj.org. Tomorrow we'll let you know if we're able to do it. Double your impact. Again, only trying to raise technically half of that. because the other half is matched. The deadline is approaching, though. The entire Double Your Impact drive ends at the end of the month, and this is the last chance to be a part of this special moment, this special challenge that I've offered just to our audience right now. If you like this show, if you like what we do here, if you like the content, it's a great way to show support to our media team. It's at aclj.org. Have your tax-deductible donation doubled today. Again, at aclj.org. Welcome to Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. Brand new show every day. aclj.org.